Anyway, one of my names is Elijah David. This is the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August 3, 2017. It is the 12th day of Av 2021. We're going to first service today with a song entitled Until Then. When I pause to remember, my heartache here is but a stepping stone along a trail that's winding always upward. This troubled world is not my final. Until then, my love goes singing. Until then, the joy I'll carry on. Until the day must behold the setting. Until the day your calls me home. The things of earth will dim and lose their value if we recall their sorrows for a while. And things of earth that cause a heart to tremble, remember that will only bring a smile. But until then, my heart will go singing. Until then, the joy I'll carry on. Until the day must be home. Until the day your calls me home. This weary world with all its toil and struggle may take its toll of misery and strife. The soul of man is like a weight in falcon, and its relief is destined for the sky. But until then, my heart will go then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day must behold the city. Until the day your calls me home.
Part 20. Prophecies in Daniel Revelation. We're on Study Rod, Volume 2, page 237. We're going to do, starting with Reason Why 3 Hours for a Movement. We're going to, I think this is a little review here, really, from our last study. And as we're reviewing, we probably could back up more. And let's just back up and do a little review. Clear back to why early in the morning. We're on page 236. For the evidence brought forth shows that the calls, messages, before Israel went out of the Egypt were not included in the parable. That the call of Israel was early in the morning. So So that would be the first hour of the parabolic day, number one. Now, Yahshua was divided, or Yahshua, for the Yahshua, the Son, has divided the history of the congregation in this system into two equal parts of the 12 hours each. And the parable here refers only unto the part called day. The period of the Bible, Yahshua answered, are there not 12 hours in a day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. John 11:9. Therefore, the period before the Bible came is called now. Not that the Yahweh's people were left in darkness concerning his word, but that it was orally passed from father to son, while the written word is a direct revelation life. Thus, he has portrayed the history of his church on a 24-hour clock dial. We may better comprehend this study by a brief summary as we follow the chart on page 224. There are only five calls in the parable. First, those who were called early, Israel out of the Egypt. Second, those who went to labor in the vineyard at the third hour, the early Christian church. Third, the sixth hour call, that would be the early apostolic church. And third, the sixth hour call, William Miller, 1833, and his co-workers. Fourth, the ninth hour call, the third angel, and the first cry after 1844. So that would be, the first cry was with a loud voice to the Adventist church. And what was that cry? That was the third angel's cry. And what was it? What did it cry? It says, don't go back and take the mark of the beast. That's what the first cry was all about. Fifth, the 11th hour call, the loud cry of the third angel's message, once again, to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now, I missed that yesterday in my last study. I said the first cry was to the church, which was with a loud voice, 1844, was to the Advent host. And I said the second cry of the third angel was to the world, but it is not. It is, again, to the Adventist church, because Adventists exclusively owned the three angels, and they had nothing more. They didn't have the fourth and fifth angel. This loud cry is going to be heralded then to the Gentile world. Because this heralding of the second time, the loud cry of the third angel's message for the Adventists, is to bring out the 144,000, the first fruits harvest, to bring to a close the Adventist church. That's just why I had the prophecy on this bringing to a close of the Adventist church, and I'm going to go read that to you right now. Let's go to Ellen G. White, Volume 3 of her testimonies. Let's do page 265, Duty to Reprove Sin. I have been shown that Yahweh here illustrates how he regards sin among those he professed to be his commandment-keeping people. Those whom he has specifically honored with witnessing the remarkable exhibitions of his power, as did the ancient Israel, and who will even then venture to disregard his express directions, will be subject of his wrath. He would teach his people that disobedience and sin are exceedingly offensive unto him, and are not to be lightly regarded. He shows us that when his people are found in sin, they should at once take decided measures to put the sin from them. that his frown may not rest upon them all. But if the sins of the people are passed over by those in responsible positions, his frown will be upon them. And the people of Yahweh as a body will be held responsible for those sins. In his dealings with his people in the past, Yahweh shows the necessity of purifying the church from wrongs. One sinner may diffuse darkness that will exclude the light of Yahweh from the entire congregation. When the people realize that darkness is sitting upon them and they do not know the cause, they should seek Yahweh earnestly in the great humility and self-abasement until the wrongs which grieve his spirit are searched out and put away. The prejudice which has arisen against us because we have reproved the wrongs that Yahweh has shown me existed, and the cry that has been raised of the harshness and severity are unjust. Yahweh bids us speak, and we will not be silent. If wrongs are apparent among his people, and if the servants of Yahweh pass on indifferent unto them, they virtually sustain and justify the sinner, and are alike guilty, and will just as surely receive the displeasure of Yahweh, for they will be made responsible for the sins of the guilty. In vision, I have been pointed to many instances where the displeasure of Yahweh has been incurred by a neglect on the part of his servants to deal with the wrongs and sins existing among them. Those who have excused these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovely in disposition, simply because they shunned to discharge a plain scriptural duty. The task was not agreeable to their feelings, therefore they avoided it. For the spirit of the hatred which has existed with some because the wrongs among Yahweh's people have been reproved has brought blindness and a fearful deception upon their own souls, making it impossible for them to discriminate between right and wrong. They have put out their own spiritual eyesight. They may witness wrongs, but they do not feel as did Joshua and humble themselves because the danger of souls is felt by them. The true people of Yahweh, who have the spirit of the work of the Yahweh and the salvation of souls at heart, will ever view sin in its real sinful character. They will always be on the side of faithful and plain dealing with sins which easily beset the people of Yahweh, especially in the clothing work for the church and the sealing time of the 144,000 who are to stand without sin, without fault, before the throne of Yahweh. Will they feel most deeply the wrongs of Yahweh's professed people? This is forcibly set forth by the prophet's illustration of the last work under the figure of the man, each having a slaughter weapon in his hand. One man among them was clothed with the linen, with a writer's inkhorn by his side. So when the third angel's message started his closing work for the Adventist church, it started at Gilead Center 2002, it started his closing work. Actually, Gilead Center's closing work started when Yahweh told Verlis Johnson to lock the doors at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock on a solemn assembly of 1999. And Verlis Johnson did not obey the order very little. He because his family balked against it. And so he left the doors open, and his ordained son Daniel refused to come to the first meeting at 9 o'clock. He stayed home in another town, and so he had to get a call from a friend in the church to make it to the ninth hour at 3 o'clock. And he came over, and he made it for that ninth hour. So when I Runner Johnson and I had a talk about it after it was all over, and he asked me, or I told him, I said, well, looks like your son got locked out, and it looked like he didn't make it. I said, so, because you said everybody didn't come to be there on time for the 9 o'clock and the 3 o'clock would be locked out, and that means that they're cut off. So therefore, your son has been cut off. And he rose up against that. Well, it was a while later that we were talking one day, and he said he wanted to talk about that again. He said, you still think Daniel was cut off? And I said, absolutely. Well, he said he still comes to church. He still takes his position. And I said, well, that's because you haven't set him down. I said, that's because you haven't told him. You know, if you don't say anything, he's not going to, he doesn't know. So anyway, that started the closing work for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, was at the Solemn Assembly of 1999 at Kermit, Texas, in September. That was in the month of the seventh month. And the Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of the Yahrus, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men, as a sign that cry for all the abomination that be done in the midst thereof. So that constituted the loud cry of the third angel's message, the second time, to the Adventist church, and that was to the prophet again. The first time the loud cry sounded was by William Miller in 1844. And he was the prophet of the sixth hour call for working in the seventh, eighth, and ninth parabolic hours from 1833 to 1844. And he is the one that delivered the first cry of the third angel's message to the Seventh-day Adventists. And Ellen G. White answered that call. She answered that call of the cry of the third angel's message, and became the leader and the prophetess with inspiration for that little Advent band that started this movement, because there was a prophet that answered the call of the third angel's message, the loud cry of, which was given by a loud voice unto Ellen G. White. There was no loud cry. Nobody else heard that cry of the third angel but Ellen G. White. Nobody else heard it, but she answered it. And nobody else heard the third cry of the third angel's message in 2002, except Willis Johnson. And he refused to obey it, and so the rest is history. Who are standing in the council of Yahweh at this time? Is it those who virtually excuse wrongs among the professed people of Yahweh, and who murmur in their hearts, if not openly, against those who would reprove sin? Is it those who take their stand against them and sympathize with those who commit wrong? No, indeed. Unless they repent and leave the work of Satan and the oppression of those who have the burden of the work and in the holding up of the hands of the sinners in Zion, they will never need to receive the mark of Elohim's seal and approval. They will fall in the general destruction of the wicked, represented by the work of the five men bearing slaughter weapons. Mark this point with care. Those who receive the pure mark of the truth wrought in them by the power of the Holy Spirit, represented by a mark, by a man, by the man in the linen, are those that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation. Their love for the purity and the honor and glory of the Elohim is such as they have so clear a view of the exceeding sinfulness of sin that they are represented as being agony, even sighing and crying. Read the ninth chapter of Ezekiel. So, I told Brother Johnson at the beginning of the loud cry of the third angel's message in 1999, I told him who was cut off and who wasn't. And then 3.5 years later, he had a message again 3.5 years later that they were cut off for the final time. And he was given an invitation 2003 at the Passover to come and take the Passover with us, repent of the last 33 years of his sins and the church's sin, and let us all take the Passover together at my place. Meaning that he was not to take it at his place anymore in the church congregation, because Yahweh had abandoned it. He was now abiding at my place. And I was there to give the invitation. It was rejected. So that was a closing word for Gilead Center, which represents the closing work for the whole Seventh-day Adventist Church. Once 144,000 comes for it. So it says, but the general slaughter of all those who do not thus see the wide contrast between sin and righteousness, and do not feel as those who do who stand in the council of Yahweh and receive the mark, is described in order unto the five men with a slaughter weapon. Go ye after him through the city and smite, let not your eyes spare, neither have you pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. So Yahweh's sanctuary was the headwaters, the headquarters for it was at Gilead Center 2002, and that's where it began. Okay, in the case of Achan's sin, Yahweh said unto Joshua, and as I give Brother Johnson the testimony one day, I told him his son was antypical Achan, because he had stolen the church's treasury, and you conspired with him to do it. So therefore, you're both guilty of stealing the Yahweh's devoted funds that had been set aside for 50 years for the gospel work. Neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy the accursed from among you. So Brother Johnson was commanded to destroy his son, David Johnson, after it was revealed unto him that David Johnson was a guilty Achan, after Brother Johnson had preached a sermon that one day on there's an Achan in the church. And every time he would say, mention the Achan in his sermon, he would look toward at me. And so, I went to him and told him that I felt like that he was pointing that sermon toward me, and that I don't feel in my heart that I'm an Achan. So I went to Yahweh and asked him, I said, who is the true Achan in the church? And I cast lots on it. And then he told me it was David Johnson. So I went back and told Brother Johnson, it was David Johnson, he is the true Achan. And so what does that tell you? The true Achan was discovered, Brother Johnson wouldn't destroy him. Because Brother Johnson was claiming to be this antypical Joshua. I don't care how you measure. He took the title Joshua the Son of Nun in 1970 when he started his ministry with the Isaac Branch Ministry at Gilead Center. He took the title of the Joshua the Son of Nun, the successor to the Moses. And he called V.T. Hollis, the Shepherd Rod, the Moses, the last 40-year period of the Moses movement. So he said Joshua took the reins from Moses in the type. So likewise, I'm taking the reins from the Moses period in our day, of a 40-year period, and so therefore I'm antitypical Joshua, son of Nun, and he made that clear. And then by 1999, he wrote another tract saying that he was Joshua, the son of Josedek. 28 years later, after he said, I'm Joshua, the son of Nun, he said, now he published it. I got the tract here. So said, I'm Joshua, the son of Josedek, in other words. So he never did get away from that title of being Joshua. So here it is again, Joshua involved in being told to cleanse the camp of the Achans. And he didn't know at first that there was an Achan that was causing the trouble. But whenever he was over with, he knew the name of the troublemaker, and that his name was Achan. So when Brother Johnson preached that sermon that day on the Achan in the camp, it gave me opportunity to talk to Yahweh and to pursue this matter and find out who the true Achan is. Let's continue to read. I'm on page 267. It's Testimonies, Volume 3 of Baal and G. White. Says, how does this instance compare with the course pursued by those who will not raise their voice against sin and wrong, but whose sympathies are ever bound with those who trouble the camp of Israel with their sin? Said John unto Joshua, said Yahweh unto Joshua, thou canst not stand before thine enemy, until you take away the accursed thing from among you. He pronounced the punishment which would follow the transgression of his covenant. Now, I want to say this again. If Brother Johnson truly, the prophecy bore out that he was truly this antithetical Joshua, at least the Joshua the son of Josedek, which V.T. Hollis, with the inspiration, says that Joshua, the son of Josedek, is this antitypical David here in these last days. And that's V.T. Hollis' inspiration on it. But Brother Johnson wasn't using V.T. Hollis' inspiration when he said when he wrote his tract indicating that he was this Joshua, the son of Josedek. And he also indicated that he was the one with the filthy garments, because he was this Joshua, the son of Josedek, in Zechariah 3, that had to have his garments cleansed. Had to have them changed. So Brother Johnson had to admit that he was this, and that he had filthy garments. Joshua then began a diligent search to find out the guilty one. But when Brother Johnson preached that sermon that day on there's an Achan in the church, and almost an Achan in every family, he said. Just quote Ellen G. White on that. And then so, did he do a diligent search, though, to find out who the true Achan was? I show not. No, he didn't. He didn't do a diligent search. But he assumed that he knew who the Achan was, and so much so that he even prepared a sermon for it. And he was so sure that it was me that he outlined his sermon around the one subject, and that it would be known and felt by everyone in the congregation that Elijah David was this here guilty antitypical Achan. So I took it and went to Yahweh about it and inquired of him, and he showed me who it was, and I went and told Brother Johnson. That's what I did. So I didn't mix any words about it. I just took care of it. And so it proved out to be right, because David died right after that. So he said he took Israel by their tribes, then by their families, and next individually. And Achan was designated as the guilty one. But that the matter might be plain unto all Israel, that there should be no occasion given them to murmur and to say that the guiltless was made to suffer. Joshua used policy. He knew Achan was a transgressor, and that he had concealed his sin and provoked Yahweh against his people. Joshua discreetly induced Achan to make confession of his sin, that Yahweh's honor and justice might be vindicated before Israel. So you see, when I told Brother Johnson that the true Achan was his son David, then the next move that Johnson, according to the prophecy here, Bless you, called up this year Achan before the church and say, here's the Achan. Now, that's been proven out. Elijah David here, or Denton Brunton, he has proved it out. And according to the prophecy in the scriptures, and so therefore, Brother Johnson was required to do that and deal with his son David. But because he refused to do that, he didn't even believe the report anyway. And Joshua said unto Achan, my son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done, hide it not from me. So now I represented this Joshua in place of Brother Johnson. And Yahweh, because I had that title of Antipical David, and he has also that identity as Antipical Joshua and Elijah, this David, this master prophet in these last days. He has this identity. All right, he says, and Achan answered Joshua and said, indeed, I have sinned against the Yahweh Elohim of Israel. And thus have I done. And I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment, and 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold of the 50 shekel weight. And then I coveted them, and I took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran unto the tent, and behold, it was hid in his tent, and the silver under it. And they took them out of the midst of the tent, and brought them unto Joshua, and unto all the children of Israel, and laid them out before the Yahweh, and Joshua and all Israel with him, and took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had, and they brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why hast thou troubled us? Yahweh shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with stone, and burned them with fire, after they had stoned them with the stones. And Yahweh said unto Joshua, that Achan had not only taken the things which he had positively charged them not to take, lest they be accursed, but he had stolen and had also disassembled. For the Yahweh said that Jericho and all its spoils should be consumed, except the gold and silver, which were to be reserved for the treasury of the Yahweh. For the victory of the taking Jericho was not obtained through warfare or the exposure of the people. For the captain of Yahweh's host had led the armies of heaven. The battle was Yahweh's. It was he who fought the battle. The children of Israel did not strike a blow. The victory and glory were the Yahweh's, and the spoils were his. He directed all to be consumed except the gold and silver, which he reserved for his treasure. Achan understood well the reserve made, and that the treasure of gold and silver which he coveted it was the Yahweh. He stole from the Yahweh's treasury for his own benefit. That's exactly what Brother Johnson conspired with David Johnson to do. They stole at least $75,000 worth of money out of the treasury that had been set aside for at least 50 years for one purpose, and that was for the, as the lady said, that started the chest for the gospel ministry. And that was Rhoda Johnson's, his called his godmother, his mother-in-law, was the one that set up that treasury. And Brother Johnson showed that he was an unfaithful steward of Yahweh's goods. He even stole the treasury's money. Well, they paid dearly for it. This is all history. But we have had the close of the third angel's message to the Adventist Church. We're just waiting for the appointed event by prophecy when Yahweh will bring the 144,000 as a result of the closing work of the Adventist Church and the loud cry of the third angel repeated a second time to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. This will be what will bring forth the 144,000. That's all the Adventists can accomplish with the three angels' messages. That's all they would ever allow while they were teaching. That's all they would allow from the time of 1844 until this very day. Now, how many years is that, 1844? You got 156 up to 2000, and you add 17 on to that. And that's, looks like, 173 years that the Adventists have been holding on to that three angels' messages, and they ain't no more, they say. Well, we know that there are more angels. And there are five angels in Revelation 14, or you're left without rule to interpret that chapter according to James White and Ellen G. White. In 1847, they wrote that information in the Word of the Little Flock. That ends our reading from the Testimony of Volume 3, page 260. I finished on 269. It's all good reading. Let us now go back to our Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. We're on page 236. As for the fifth, the 11th hour call, and that's who we represent. We're this fifth group of laborers. I represented the 11th hour call, which was at the end of the 11th hour. Okay, it says, the loud cry of the third angel's message, as number 7, is used unto every one of Yahweh's finished acts to denote completeness. There must have been two such calls before Israel time, otherwise it would show incompleteness in the proclamation of the gospel. And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these saying, behold, the Yahshua cometh with 10,000 of his saints, Jude 14. As Enoch had a worldwide message of the coming of the Yahshua, his message is the first call. Okay, so now it says Enoch's message is the first call. Noah's call is the second from the creation. Therefore, seven in all, meaning perfect, finished, the end of the gospel. Okay, so now the seventh call means the end of the call, the gospel. It says seven universal movements. Thus far we have referred unto the calls only, but now we turn our attention unto the movement. The start of the first movement is from the time Adam sinned unto Enoch's message. That was the first call. So the first movement is from the time Adam sinned unto Enoch's message. Alright, Adam sinned at the end of the third parabolic hour. Like Yahshua was hung on the cross at the end of the third parabolic hour, forced the sins of the world back to Adam's time. So likewise, Adam committed his sin at the third hour, at the closing of it, in his day, closing out a 33 and a half year of ministry in the Garden of Eden in a perfect atmosphere. Second, from the Enoch unto Noah. Third, from the Noah unto Moses. Fourth, from the Moses unto the apostles. Fifth, from the apostles unto Miller. Sixth, from the Miller unto E.G. White. And seventh, and E.G. White until the end. From the last call until the end, being only 1 hour, it proves that there is no time for a new movement. Well, actually it says from the last call until the end, from the last call, being only 1 hour, and that 1 hour is the 12th hour, and the last call came at the end of the 11th hour, it proves that there is time. There is no time for a new movement. Only thing is, Vitiales had it all backwards. There is time for one more new movement. And that's the fifth group that was called at the end of the 11th hour to work in the 12th hour. And that was your fifth movement, which was not a part of the fourth movement of the Adventists. It's a complete separate movement all of its own. And that started in 2002 with Elijah David. Actually, I say it started in 2002. I'm going to back that up 3.5 years to the year 2000. I'm going to back it up to 2000. Because that's when I definitely was answering my call. When Brother Johnson finished out 30 years ministry, his ministry from 1970 to 2000, by the death of his son in 1998, that closed out a 30-year period for Brother Johnson's ministry. Well, that's in line. When I met Brother Johnson in 1970, the first thing he told me, one of the first things he told me, we're looking at 30 years. We're looking at a 30-year prophecy that will bring us to the year 2000. We're going to be here for 30 years. And he let me know that exactly. So I was there that whole 30 years, and I witnessed what happened at the end of that 30 years. I was there to pick up the gauntlet and to answer the call. Now I answered. So there's the seven calls all together. Well, I answered the seventh call. Well, I say I did. Let's just back that up one notch. Ellen G. White answered the seventh call, 1844. I answered the eighth call, and that was in the 12th hour. Okay? Seven universal movements. Thus far we have referred unto the calls only. But now we turn our attention unto the movements. I have done read that. Okay. So it says that that last call, so that would be the call now, the eighth call. See, the last call is the eighth call, which is the fifth call, which is the fifth call of that fifth group of laborers called at the end of the Matthew 20. Matthew 20, verse 6, that fifth group that answered the call of the 12th hour, that's the eighth call from Enoch. That's the eighth call from Enoch. And I just know we can prove that. Enoch, number one. Noah, number two. We had Moses, number three. We had Yeshua and the disciples, number four. We had William Miller, number five, 1833. We had E.G. White, number six, okay, in 1844. Okay, so I had it right the first time. It was exactly Elijah David answering the seventh call, answering the seventh call. And the seventh call is of the eighth. I answered the seventh call when it had its beginning in 2000. So, your seven calls, there is seven movements in that regard. There are seven movements, seven calls. Because each movement has a call. So, if Ellen G. White answers this, we're missing one somewhere. Okay, we're missing one somewhere. B.T. Hollis says that Enoch answered the first call. No. Adam answered the first call. Adam answered the first call. Enoch answered the second call. Noah answered the third call. Moses answered the fourth call. Yahshua answered at the cross the fifth call. Miller answered the sixth call. E.G. White answered the seventh call. Elijah David answered the eighth call. Okay, that's got it straight. So it says, as we continue on page 237, Shepherd Rod, volume 2, says the time allowed for each movement is marked on Yahweh's clock dial as 3 hours. The first 3 hours on the dial indicate from the creation until the fall of Adam. So, when you had the fall of Adam, then he answered the first call, go to work, practicing the ceremonial system, how to return back to Garden of Eden, and to teach his descendants. Okay, then Enoch was next, Noah was next, Moses was next, Yahshua was next, William Miller was next, E.G. White was next, Elijah David was next. Consequently, it leaves only 21 allegorical hours for the human probation. No, Adam, yeah, 21 allegorical hours for the human probation. 7 times 3 equals 21. But the thing is, in this last 3 hour period, it was split up for 2 calls to be made. That's what makes the difference. In that 21 hour period allocated 8 calls. 8 calls made in that 21 allegorical hours. 8 calls during that 21 hour period. Okay, now Vicki Hollis got that on his chart, on the 24-hour chart there, that 12-hour chart for the night and 12-hour for the day. He's got that on there. For between 11 and 12, he's got it pointed out on his chart that there are 2 calls there. I mean, between the 9th and the 12th, there are 2 calls. There's a 3-hour segment there. Reason why 3 hours to a movement. The following fact further proves that the church history in this instance is represented by a 24-hour clock dial. If the call came to Israel early in the morning at the 12th hour, now see, the Bible says it was the early morning hour. The prophet Matthew 20 said that Moses answered that call at the early hour. The early hour is your first hour of the day. The Vitiala says, early in the morning at the 12th hour. No. Yeah, it's true enough. The 12th hour closes out early in the morning, but that's what closes out the last hour of the night. So, it should be, if the call came to Israel early in the morning at the first hour, not at the 12th hour, but at the first hour, and the day closed at the following 12th hour, no, it didn't close at the following 12th hour. It closed at the end of the following 12th hour, starting the night with the first hour again, called day, because the written word of Yahweh was in existence for light to the church. Then the period that preceded the Bible is symbolically called night. There you have it. From 1 to 1, first hour of the day to the first hour, the last hour of the evening is from 1 to 1. There's a 12-hour period encased in between those 2 ones. There's 12 hours encased. Some may question the evidence for allowing 3 hours to each incident. Well, yeah, there's the first 3 hours was 1 call for each one of those 3 hours. Only 1 call for labor. But that last 3 hour segment was a call to groups of laborers, the fourth and the fifth, from creation to the fall of Adam. Again, the Enoch and Noah. If Yahweh worked on the 3-hour schedule with the crucifixion of the Asura, see chart on page 22, and the same rule was followed in a period called day, then the certainty would not follow another rule in the period called night. The reason he has followed that particular rule is to present unto his congregation the exact time of her history by the periods. Let us examine the evidence from another angle. For the first man that sinned is called the first Adam. Now look at the clock dial. From the third hour and the dark part, the fall of Adam, opposite to the third hour and the light part, and we see the second Adam, Yahshua, crucified. Again, look at the sixth hour and the dark part of the clock dial. You see any proper sign of the coming of the Yahshua. Opposite to the sixth hour of in the light part, and there we see Miller also prophesying of the same event. Now, here's Miller prophesying of the same event, the coming of Yahshua. This is one of the reasons why Yahweh allowed Miller to proclaim the coming of Yahshua in 1844. Now look at the ninth hour. Nor predicting the end of the world in this generation, and opposite unto the ninth hour, in the light part, we see E.G. White prophesying of the end of the world in this generation. And that is where this generation began, 1844. And at the 12th hour, okay, now look at this. And so we'll say, at and in the 12th hour, Israel after the flesh going out of Egypt, and opposite the 12th hour, sunset, we see Israel as the spirit finished product going out of the world, Egypt. Therefore, there is no question but what the fall of the Adam, the prophecy of Enoch and Noah, came at the hours as shown on the chart. Here we see another type, Yahweh's truth unto the world. Before the Bible came, coincides with his truth in the time of the Bible, showing that Yahweh has put one truth, one Yahshua, and one gospel in all ages. Therefore, the idea taught by the self-styled ministers of the gospel that Yahweh had one method of saving people before the Bible came into existence, and another in the Old Testament time with the descendants of the Abraham, and still another for the New and the Gentile, etc., is a deception of the devil, and there is no truth in it. Not only the things written prove the truth and exposes the error, but even common reasoning tells us that there can be no justice to such an ever-changing method of the salvation. For I am the Yahweh, I change not. This means further by step, this hour, contact at the 11th hour, corner number 11, click on the audio archives, hear this message, and more. We're going to close now with a song. Further along. If God and God will offer to wander, why it should be thus all of his love, while there are others living about us, yet in my last end, knowing the wrong, father of love with no one about it. Father of long will understand why. Cheer up my brother, live in the sunshine. We'll understand it over and by. When death has come and taken the loved one, it leaves a home so lonely and dim. The
daily wonder of this prosper, living so wicked year after year. Father alone will know about it. Father alone will understand why. Cheer up, my brother, live in the sunshine. We'll understand it above and by. Take the tradition, our loving master. A few more days, later in May, hold up the road, now, empty as nothing, as we sleep through the beautiful day. But it alone will know all about it. Father alone will understand why. Cheer up, my brother, live in the sunshine. We'll understand it over and by. When we see Yahshua coming in glory, when he comes from his home in the sky, then we shall be there in the dark mansion. We'll understand.